picture of the Bible. I'm going to try and show over the next few weeks when I'm speaking. I'm going to be taking this idea of working through to try and pick out the thread of the plan of God in the Bible to help you make sense of what fits where and why. And that will give us a greater understanding of the whole thing and to see how it fits in together. So this morning, just think about the Bible in itself. You know how many books there are in the Bible? There are 66 different books, chapters, portions, if you like, in the Bible. Do you know how many different authors there are of the Bible? Some of you may know this, but many of you will have no idea. I don't think I could have given the specific figure, to be honest. Anybody know? There are 40 different authors of the Bible, 40 different people. And it was written over a period of some 2,000 years. So 40 people writing, first one at year whatever, and then 2,000 years later, the last book was written. That's why it's important for us to see the big theme. Because I have the thing brought up to me very often by people who are skeptical of the Bible and don't have an understanding. Well, of course, different bits contradict and different bits... I want to show you that there is a theme that runs through. There are some tricky bits to understand. Let's hold our hands up. There are some bits where, the people who have been to university and have spent their life trying to understand some of the parts, there are bits where they disagree. But there is a theme that runs through it all. And that's the one story throughout the whole thing. And that's because it's about God. And that's where we'll start this morning. It's about God's rule and his kingdom. It is the fact that God made things and his desire is to have a people living with him, working with him throughout all eternity. That's the theme of it. It starts where we'll start this morning in just a moment in Genesis chapter 1. And it flows through. And that is the bit that holds everything in the Bible together. That God wants people to be with him. It is his kingdom, we might say. If God is the king, he wants to have people that work with him. And it's about him and his rule. And here's the thing. If we can get hold of this big theme, this big picture, this big theme, the master plan, then we will start to see that God makes sense and how he makes sense of our world. So I'm going to invite you to come with me over, it may be 3 weeks, it may be 4 weeks, it may well extend longer than that, but there's a number of things that are happening this autumn. You know, I'm away for most of November, so we've got harvest coming in, we've got a baptism service coming up, hallelujah, praise God. If there's anybody else who would like to be baptized, you know it's time that you should be baptized. You love Jesus, but you've never followed him in the waters of baptism. You've never been obedient. Please have a word with me, and we can get that sorted out. You've got a month to do it, just over. So we can sort that. So there's a number of things. So I'm not sure how connected this will all be. It may just be a bit disjointed. But the fact that we've got a theme, hopefully we can go on from week to week with that together. So let's start this morning, Genesis chapter 1. I will have a read of that passage. You probably all know certain parts of it, but I wonder how well. And it's good to remind ourselves this morning. Diane, thank you.
So Genesis chapter 1. Can everyone hear? In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters. And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. God saw that the light was good, and he separated the light from the darkness. God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. There was evening, and there was morning the first day. And God said, "Let there be an expanse between the waters to separate water from water." So God made the expanse and separated the water under the expanse from the water above it, and it was so. God called the expanse sky, And there was evening and there was morning, the second day. And God said, let the water under the sky be gathered to one place, and let dry ground appear. And it was so. God called the dry ground land, and the gathered waters he called seas. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, let the land produce vegetation, seed-bearing plants, and trees on the land that bear fruit, with seed in it according to their various kinds. And it was so. The land produced vegetation, plants bearing seed according to their kinds, and trees bearing fruit with seed in it according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning, the third day. And God said, let there be lights in the expanse of the sky to separate the day from the night, and let them serve as signs to mark seasons and days and years, and let them be lights in the expanse of the sky to give light on the earth. And it was so. God made two great lights, the greater light to govern the day and the lesser light to govern the night. He also made the stars. God set them in the expanse of the sky to give light on the earth, to govern the day and the night, and to separate light from darkness. And God saw that it was good. And there was evening and there was morning, the fourth day. And God said, let the water teem with living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the expanse of the sky. So God created the great creatures of the sea and every living and moving thing with which the water teems according to their kinds, and every winged bird according to its kind. And God saw that it was good. God blessed them and said, be fruitful and increase in number, and fill the water in the seas, and let the birds increase on the earth. And there was evening and there was morning, the fifth day. And God said, let the land produce living creatures according to their kinds, livestock, creatures that move along the ground, and wild animals, each according to its kind. And it was so. God made the wild animals according to their kinds, the livestock according to their kinds, and all the creatures that move along the ground according to their kinds. And God saw that it was good. Then God said, let us make man in our image, in our likeness, and let them rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air, over the livestock, over all the earth, and over all the creatures that move along the ground. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him, male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and over every living creature that moves on the ground. Then God said, I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They will be yours for food. And to all the beasts of the earth and all the birds of the air and all the creatures that move on the ground, everything that has the breath of life in it, I give every green plant for food. And it was so. God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day.
I like that. And it was very good. Not just good. Whatever God does is very good. It always is. So we're starting today at the beginning. We can't deal with all of it. There's going to be great chunks that we're going to miss out. But I have to say, we're going to spend a large proportion of this particular series in Genesis. And we're going to spend, if we do 4 weeks, we'll probably spend 3 weeks in Genesis. So if it was 4 weeks, the whole series, we're going to spend 3 weeks. So how does that work out? Because if we don't get Genesis, then we don't get the story. Because the whole thing is, it takes root in these first early chapters. First 11, 12, 13 chapters of Genesis really help us to understand everything about the rest of the story. But today we'll start and we'll stick with creation, because it shows us two things. It shows us, first of all, the supremacy of God. It shows us that God is over all things. We have to understand that Genesis 1 and 2 were never meant as a science manual. They were never meant as a manual to show us when and how. It's a mistake that many people made. It's when they get tangled up in knots. It's not about when. It's about who and why. It's about God, and it's about how he made it. It's about revealing the purpose of the who and the why. That he made it out of nothing. God spoke, and it was. That's his revelation to us. He spoke, and it was. It doesn't tell us exactly when he did that. It just says in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And in clear and unmistakable simplicity, it is just that God did it. Full stop. God made the heavens and the earth. That's the first line. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. But then it describes the condition of it at that point. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep. And the Spirit, and this is a key thing, and the Spirit of God was hovering over it. It doesn't tell us any processes that God used, if he used any. It just says that he spoke it. This is telling us about God. It tells us about his power. It tells us that this is his world. It tells us unmistakably, whatever questions we have, that God did it. Well, that leaves lots of questions. But in truth, to understand the rest of the Bible, we don't need the answers to those questions, apart from the fact that in the beginning, God. I don't want to get into the science stuff, but somebody's going to say, well, you know, what about the days? Didn't it take, you know, even the whole days thing is open to various legitimate understandings. The story that follows those 6 days, whether they were short or long, and whether it was a little time ago, whether it was billions of years ago, in one sense, that's not what this is about. It's about God making it and then what he does afterwards. His plans and plans for the work. If we stop at Genesis and try and get into the science, we will miss that big thing of it being about God. And that is the essence of what our faith is about. Our faith is about God. We'll let the scientists do their scientific stuff, though I find it quite interesting. No, actually, more than quite interesting. I find it very interesting. When you look at little nuances in here, you notice the thing where it says about, and there was evening and morning, the first day. What does that strike you as being strange? Evening and morning? You would normally say morning and evening, wouldn't you? Evening and morning. That's nighttime. Evening and morning, and it was the first day. What's it saying? It's saying that things went from darkness to light. All the time there was a shift from darkness and chaos to light and order. Evening and morning. That's the way God did it. Always shifting from darkness to light. That's how he works in the world. It's how he works in our lives, isn't it? He starts off when we're in darkness and he takes us into light. We start off in sin, and he takes us into the glorious light of the gospel. It's the way God works. We just see it in just a little kind of almost, I don't know whether it was meant as a throwaway comment in here or not, but it's from darkness to light. You go into science, and what do the scientists say? It starts off with darkness and comes to light. If you know, the whole theory of evolution, that is how it will move. It concurs with the Bible. I'm not saying the Bible is teaching evolution here. What I'm saying, though, is that what science has discovered actually concurs with what the Bible has said. The interpretation of it, the understanding of the detail, is different. But the essence is in there. In the beginning, God. And we have to understand that. The Bible, the Christian message, our faith is about God. It's not about us. And that's really important, because we live in a culture that wants to be about us. Wants to make mankind, people, the center of everything. You know, and it's about setting people free. You're valuable, you matter. You know, the mantra today is, you're worth it. You can be whatever you want. The most important thing is to be true to yourself. It's your happiness that counts above all things. But that's not where the Bible starts, is it? The Bible starts with in the beginning God. That God is the focus, that God is the central person. We're important, as we'll see, but not that important. God is the one that is important. This is his world. He designed it. He made it. He controls it. So the first thing that Genesis tells us is that it's not about us. And Wick Warren, in his book, Purpose Driven Life, I don't know how many of you have read that. I would commend it. Not without some caveats, but it's a really helpful thing. And he starts, the very first line of that book says this. It's not about you. The purpose of your life is far greater than your own personal fulfillment, your peace of mind, or even your happiness. It is far greater than your family, your career, or even your wildest dreams and ambitions. If you want to know you were placed, why you were placed on this planet, you must begin with God. And that's what it says in the Bible, and that's what he's picked up in that book. In a world where people are so wrapped up in themselves, it's an important reminder to us. If we start with ourselves, we end up being selfish, self-absorbed, living for ourselves, doing what we want. It is a path to ruin rather than utopia. And Genesis chapter 1, verse 1 tells us to look upward, to look out from ourselves and to look up to God. This world, this universe is about God. It's about his plan, not about us. It's about his purposes, his rule, what he wants, why he made it. So it's about God. That's the first thing. And then there's a second thing that we have here as well. Not only is it about the supremacy of God, but it's also about the dignity of human beings. If we miss these two things, then we will not understand the theme and the trend of the Bible and why things work out as they do. When I say the dignity of human beings, what I'm talking about is the importance of people in the plans of God. Though the world and the universe doesn't revolve around us, it revolves around God, in the beginning God, we are still incredibly important and have a unique and wonderful role on planet Earth. And what we see here in Genesis chapter 1 is that having started off with the big grand statement that he made everything, he then describes the way he filled it. It gets things in the right place for living creatures to live on. If you notice, it starts off at the beginning. It just says, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. And then it says, on day one, he made light and he made dark. Day two, he made the sky. He separated the waters below to the waters above. So he made the expanse of the sky. Why did he do that? So that things could live. On day three, he made the land and the sea. So he separated the seas into the land. So there was this ordering of things. And he made vegetation. So everything is in place. And then, from day four onwards, he starts to fill it. He starts off with the sun and the stars. In other words, to keep the whole thing going. But then first thing he does is the sea creatures, the fish and the birds. So he fills the sea and he fills the sky, birds and fish. And then on day six, he comes to the animals, and then he gets ultimately to people. And again, you go into the science books and you look at the theories of evolution, and what will they tell you? That it started with the sea. That their idea is that it started with the sea, that probably the first microbes that became living things, you know, came out of the primeval sludge and evolved. Now, I don't think this is teaching that at all. I don't believe that. But do you see the flow? What the Bible is saying is God started with the sea and then moved on to dry land and people. The two things aren't. It's just the interpretation of it. So that's where we have. But he says about people. The people, the mankind was the pinnacle of what he made. And it says some important things, and we really needed to have moved into chapter 2 as well to see them. But it says that he made people in his own image. When you look at verse 26, if you've got your Bibles open, look at verse 26. God said, let us make man in our image, in our likeness. Just notice the plural there, our, which kind of is a little taste of the fact that God is a Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. He didn't say in my image, he said, let's make him in our image, but in our image. He doesn't say that about any of the animals or anything else that he's created. In his image. We are created in God's image. That is the most important thing here as well. It's about our, it's not about the physical appearance. It's not about what we look like. It's not saying that God looks like one of us. It's saying about our unique ability to be rational, thinking, decision-making, moral creatures, just like God. And we see that in man's ability to quantify and categorize, the development, the initial little things of scientific discovery. You know, when he gave man and he said, I want you to name the animals. He characterized, he categorized the living things. That's science. That's what scientists do. They put things in order. And that's what Adam did. So right at the beginning, you see the beginnings of science taking place. Now, chapter 2, verse 7 is hugely significant. It says that he formed man from the dust of the ground and breathed into him the breath of life, and he became a living creature. He breathed into him the breath of life. You don't read that in any other creature that he made. There is a uniqueness that we have the breath of God that gave us the life that we have. It became a living being. It's about the soul. Totally unique. The Bible tells us that then that human beings, that we are way more than animals. It doesn't say that animals don't matter. It just says that there is a uniqueness, and our role under God is to rule them for God. Animals are not equal to us. We have the position of God to rule. It doesn't give us license to abuse them. We have to be very careful about that. They don't have a living soul. They don't have the breath of God in them, but we do. So just coming back to that thing about the ruling. It's an interesting thing. You see, you know what animal this is?
Cheetah.
A cheetah. I think that's the fastest animal, isn't it? On the planet. Then you got this one. An elephant, probably the strongest animal. Not weight for weight, but in terms of just volume that it can lift. You've got the birds, this ability to fly. I'd love to be a bird. I'd love to fly. We can't do that. We're not the fastest. We're not the strongest. We can't fly. We're not the fiercest. Some people can look pretty fierce at times. They can, but actually, we're pretty feeble, aren't we? You know, if you think about it, by nature, we can't outrun things. We can't outlift things. We don't have talons. And yet. It's us that rules, isn't it? And we see that. It is human beings that have brought those things under our control. The strongest of creatures, the wisest, the fastest, the fiercest, we're able to tame them. Why is that? It's because we're the cleverest. Because we're made in the image of God. And we're made, he says in chapter 1, verse 6, to rule them. We're created to rule under God. He's given us a capacity to master and tame and control the world around us. That's the living world and the material world, to use it to harness the resources of the earth. You don't have that in any of the other creatures, do you? It's not saying that other creatures aren't clever, but they can't do what we've done. They haven't managed to dig in and exploit the resources that we have on planet Earth. They haven't managed to split the atom. They haven't managed to get into space. They haven't even mastered being able to make glasses. There is a dignity. There's something wonderful about the intelligence, because we're made in the image of God. God is wise. He's clever. He thought it. He designed it. He made it all. And we're made in his image. Our creativity and resourcefulness means that we're able to survive in a much wider set of environments than any other animal. By ourselves, we can tame the environment. It's not an accident. It's God's design. It's how he made us to be. We are his foreman. We are his deputies, if you like, on earth. He made us to be partners with him, to work with him, to be on his side, to reign, in one sense, to reign with him, to be his friends. This is where it starts. We're made with everything laid on. Nothing was hard. Life was easy for human beings in those early days. God's plan was for us to enjoy the world, to live with him. It was made for us to get pleasure from. You can eat of anything you like. You can have it. It's all there for you. The animals and all of those things, they're there for you to take and to rule. They weren't to eat them at that time. That came later. But he was to be in control over them. You know, there is nothing holy about subduing yourself and denying yourself pleasure. God is a pleasure God. God made these things. Every good and perfect gift comes from our Father above. He made them for us to enjoy. There are people who kind of give the impression that, you know, to be holy, you've got to be denying yourself. You can't enjoy things. You've got to, you know, kind of just subdue your natural instincts and all of those things. God's nature is to give. God's nature is to enjoy. He's a God. You know, one of the fruit of the Spirit, what's the second fruit of the Spirit? Love, joy. You know, in the New Testament, after Jesus, and we are running right ahead of ourselves, when Jesus came, people were filled with joy. He set the captives free. Don't ever let it be said that Christianity and the Christian faith is a subduing thing and you've got to squeeze. His way is to set free. There was, however, just one but. There's just one but in all of this. You can eat from anything you like, he says in chapter 2, verse 17. You can eat anything, absolutely anything, the soil from the trees and the soil, except the fruit of just one tree. This is how the NLT translates it. The tree of the knowledge of good and evil. You can eat anything, absolutely anything, from the soil and the trees, except the fruit of just one tree. You see, the freedom that they enjoyed was conditional. Just one thing. Parents, have you ever found yourself saying to your children, there was just one thing I asked you to do? Just one thing? Wives, have you ever said to your husband, I just asked you to do one thing? Just one thing? There was just one thing God says I ask you not to do. I don't know how long it was before Eve went and Adam went and ate from that tree, but it was the one thing and they did it. It says, the day that you eat from that tree, you will die. You see, the freedom they enjoyed was conditional, and the freedom that they enjoyed would bring consequences if they abused that freedom. So what have we done today? We've set the thing. It's about God and it's about man working together. There was this partnership. And we've ended up with just one thing that could happen that could mar that. Most of you know where the story goes. We'll have a look at that next time, at what happened after this. But if we miss this original design of God, man working together in his creation, then we're not going to understand the rest of the Bible. So next time, we'll be looking in chapter 3, and we'll be looking at what happened after Adam and Eve had these things and what they did in response to that one condition. But this morning, let us just rejoice in God. The way he's made this wonderful world, the fact that he controls it. This is about God. Let us rejoice that he's made us for what we are. You know, with this wonderful ability to think and to act and responsibility and with him, to be friends with him. Let's redouble our resolve to focus on him and not on ourselves. Let's resolve to thank him for every good and perfect gift that he gives us. Let's redouble our resolve to enjoy the creation that God has given. Not to abuse it, but to enjoy the wonderful gifts, but most of all, to enjoy him, to live for him, to focus on him, to serve him, to follow him. As he deserves. Let's thank him for being human, for making us able to think, for giving us the ability to appreciate beauty, for giving us the ability to discover, to work, and the ability to love one another, but supremely to love him. So that sets the tone of where we are.